next list, thinking the title was a bit dickish, though accurate. Amateurs, 413. 9 researchers, 4 dark mages, 4 earth mages, 82 farmers and livestock caretakers, 18 villagers to care for children, 6 gardeners, 15 hunters, 7 smiths, 13 cooks, 8 fishermen, 8 weavers, 10 builders, 12 miners, 2 shipbuilders, 2 scath trainers, 84 Maedon sprite fighters, 61 guardsmen, 28 biomancers, 23 aeromancers, 12 healers, 10 biomancers, 41 manual laborers, 11 washers, 4 alchemists. The last chart on the page showed villagers who didn't actively contribute to the village and why. Non-workers, 249. 122 children less than 14 years. 24 elderly. 92 Maedon pixies. 11 miscellaneous. The non-workers were children who would one day be active villagers and elderly who were too old to do a full day's work. There were also some who couldn't work for other various reasons. Even life magic couldn't reverse some chronic conditions, apparently. The two lists added up to 694 souls. The next page Randy handed over was the breakdown of the new villagers. The first thing shown was how many adults and children there were. Sadly, no elderly people had survived the goblins' captivity. The Chamberlain had also broken it down by race. For some reason, there were an inordinate number of elves. Adults, total, 317. Children, total, 42. Human adults, 83. Human children, 14. Sprite adults, 55. Sprite children, 11. Elf adults, 101. Elf children, 5. Dwarven adults, 12. Dwarven children, 4. Gnomish adults, 66. Gnomish children, 8. This is great, Randy, but how does it help exactly? Ah, yes, my lord. This next page may be more useful. The Chamberlain handed over another sheet that showed anyone that had a skill rank of apprentice or higher. Unsurprisingly, there were more than a few miners that had hit apprentice rank while working in the goblin mines, though only Annalise had reached journeyman level and gained the miner profession. She also had the crafter profession. Several of the other new villagers also had professions: jeweler, bowyer, trader, painter, and one troubadour. The last profession was apparently similar to a bard. Bards, however, were considered to be a combat profession and had talents that could be extremely useful in battle. In light of that, bards had to be a minimal personal level of 20. Troubadours apparently were non-combat professionals and only required a personal level of 10 to go along with a journeyman rank in singing or some other musical skill. "They all swore fealty last night, right?" Richter asked. He'd used Analyze on everyone that had approached the stage at the party, but after using it on hundreds of people, it was hard to remember every detail. "They did, my lord," Randolphus affirmed. "Good. Make sure every one of our villagers is present at the noonday meal today. The 6 professionals from amongst the new villagers will get a quickening fruit over lunch, and I want the village to see it. I also plan to try and awaken air and life magic in everyone who swore fealty last night."
"Only those who pledged themselves to you?" Randolphus asked.
It had been Richter's practice in the past to try and awaken the magic of everyone in the village, not just those who had bent the knee.
"Yes," Richter asserted firmly. "We are growing. That means the 100% free ride is over. It is time that people see that there are clear benefits to loyalty."
"At your command, my lord," Randolphus said with a bow of his head. He was actually quite happy with the pronouncement. In his opinion, Richter had been too free and kind with his subjects. People needed a leader to be bigger than life, not a friend they could share an ale with.
"That brings us back to the main question. How would you like to allocate the work assignments for the new villagers?
As far as the professionals, have the jeweler look at our entire stockpile in the treasury and see if there's anything he can do. We have several uncut gems that he might be able to improve the value of, but I want him under guard the whole time. We won't be showing these new villagers blind trust, no matter what they vowed. Not for quite a while. The bowyers should be very helpful. We only have those clunky crossbows now. Get a list of whatever she needs and put her to work. The painter and troubadour I will leave to your discretion. If they can do things to raise the mood of the village, though, I'll consider that time well spent. As far as the trader, it's time we start offering our people a chance to spend some of the coin I've been paying them. After the town hall is built, one of the next projects I want completed is a market. We can sell some luxury goods, and it will also give people a chance to sell items gained from the dungeon. See if the trader is interested in growing that operation. And please get a list of what Annalise can make with her crafting profession. If she has any suggestions regarding our mining operations, tease those out as well. Also stress that I want all the professionals to test the other villagers, adults and children, to see if they have sufficient affinity to awaken a new skill.
As you will, my lord. Randolphus made several notations on a piece of paper.
And the others? It might be a good idea to assign more people as hunters and fishermen.
Richter considered the man's words before shaking his head slightly.
As far as everyone else, guide them where you will, but the emphasis needs to be on increasing our fighting force. Ideally, 100 or 200 of the new villagers will join the guard. After that, building up the village infrastructure, meaning getting more people with the construction skill, is the main priority. Once those two needs are met, I really want to increase the number of researchers, smiths, and alchemists. What do you think?
Randolphus shuffled through his papers until he found the one he wanted. He actually found it rather quickly, but was sighing internally, so he kept flipping through pages while he came up with a plan to make his liege see sense.
I believe that is excellent reasoning, my lord, as always, but we need to ensure that basic needs are met. The primary three are food, water, and shelter, all of which are covered on this page.
The Chamberlain handed over a sheet of paper.
Water is no problem, of course. Even if we were besieged, the lake and waterfall mean we will never overwhelm capacity, unless we have massive population growth, of course. You are already aware that shelter is an issue, my lord. Our population is greater than 1,000 now, though that does not include the pixies, who obviously do not need housing. Not including them, we need to house approximately 960 people. Each longhouse can, at capacity, provide that for 90 people, but that will be overcrowded. Over time, this will lead to drops in morale and, possibly even disease, adversely affecting the health of the village. Our goal should be for each longhouse to hold no more than 60 at a time, allowing it to provide adequate housing. In an ideal situation, the longhouses would only hold 30. This would allow those residing within to gain the comfortable perk, which can have many benefits, including increased loyalty, morale, productivity, and
population growth?
Richter asked with a scythe smile.
Always easier to seal the deal with less eyes around, am I right?
Randolphus sighed expansively, but nodded.
Yes, my lord.
That means, including the 5 longhouses that we already have, we need at minimum another 6. In a perfect world, though, we'd have 32. Is that about right?
If his math was correct, it explained why he'd gotten the warning for the available housing falling below 50% of his population's needs.
The good news was he only needed to have 1 longhouse built to avoid the penalties associated with the 50% warning. Not that he planned to do the bare minimum.
That is correct, my lord, though now we must speak of building resources. So far, the longhouses have been built only of wood. It is less durable than stone, of course, but for expedience, I recommend we continue this policy in the short term. The current design that we use requires 50 units of wood to create a single longhouse. For simplicity's sake, let us say that each tree felled can create 2 units of wood, once split longitudinally. This varies from tree to tree due to size, as I am sure you understand, my lord, but it is a safe approximation. Thankfully, you summon a large amount of mist workers on a daily basis. This greatly increases the speed at which the village is able to harvest wood. At present, we have 214 felled trees that can be turned into 428 units of wood with little difficulty or time expenditure.
Richter thought. We have enough wood to make 8 longhouses, provided we don't need the wood for anything else. Is there a way to improve the yield of the trees we chop down? To make trees provide more functional units?
Yes, and I've already spoken with our new professional lumberjack. He is amenable to purchasing a talent that lets him rough boards from felled trees. At the first rank of the talent, he will be able to make a felled tree produce 3 units of wood instead of 2.
Not bad, Richter replied, nodding. We can increase our stockpile by 50% right there.
Yes, my lord. The best option would be to build a lumber mill, however, so that each tree can be made into finely milled planks. If we had that, each tree could make 4, 6, or even 8 units of wood. Unfortunately, we do not have the blueprints to make such a building.
All right, so that's water and shelter. Doesn't seem like either will be a big deal. What about food?
For convenience sake, Randy handed him another piece of paper. I have quantified 1 unit of food as what is required to sustain 1 person for 1 day. Again, this is a simplification. Children eat less than adults, but our fighters also eat more than the researchers. Again, on average, the measurement makes sense.
Richter nodded to show that he was following along.
Thankfully, we are blessed in that department as well, Randolphus continued. The quickening increases the yield of our resources by 25%, and the perk from your life mastery increases the growth rate by 30%. Even better, Isabella's spell Virul's Blessing has the potential to further increase the yield of our crops by up to 100%. This is especially beneficial because, as you know, we lost most of our crops in the bugbear attack about 70 days ago, as well as a good number of our stores. The good news is that we have more than made up for those losses in the months since. Currently, the village has 5 basic farms. They each cover 1-by-1-mile areas. One farm can make enough food to feed 500 people for half a year. I must again remind you, my lord, that this is all an approximation, as some crops grow better or worse in certain conditions. There is also great variability in the number of days in each of the 14 months of the year, but it is close enough to serve our purposes. 45 days ago, Basil brought back enough rations to feed 500 people for 6 months, or approximately 90,000 units of food. Before that, not including the livestock, we still had 11,007 units of food. Since that time, we have eaten 32,684 units. It would have been less, the Chamberlain fixed him with a slightly judging glare, but the many feasts you call for consume 2 to 3 times as much food as a regular meal. Richter just fixed him back with a glare. The damn Chamberlain was always trying to kill the fun. Carrying on, my lord, we have unfortunately also experienced some losses due to pests. The burrower rats were able to destroy another 12,711 units of food.
What? Richter asked in shock. It had been a bit of a mystery why the vermin, normally only seen deep in the earth, had come so close to the surface. They had been able to bypass the normal repel vermin charms that the people of the land used. He'd found a workaround a week later, but apparently the little buggers had still made a serious dent in the village's stores. He shook his head, partly in self-recrimination. He'd been told that about 12% of the food stores had been lost, but since they were still bringing in more every day, he'd basically put the matter out of his mind and let Randy handle it. He realized it was time to start taking a more active role. Heaving a big sigh, he said, "Thank you for handling all of this in the past. I'm going to do better about helping you out, man." "Where does this leave us now?" Randy smiled at him appreciatively.
"Thank you, my lord. I appreciate that. In answer to your question, after the losses from the burrower rats and including the losses due to a lack of an appropriate storage area..."
"What losses?" Richter asked, irritated that there had been more waste. Randolphus didn't take it personally. He'd given enough bad news to rulers to know what to expect.
"Right now, the food is being stored in generic shacks, and there still aren't enough of those. Without a proper storage area, we are losing 1 to 3% of our food stores each week to rot and degradation. We have lost another 14,328 units in the past 6 weeks. With all of this taken into account, there were 41,284 food units left from our stores before the raid on the Goblin settlement." Richter took a piece of paper from the Chamberlain and did some calculations of his own.
What you're telling me is that in just 45 days, we burn through almost 60% of all of our food. That was with a population of about 700 people. Randolphus nodded. And now I just added another 359 mouths to feed. The enormity of the problem was beginning to dawn on him.
Yes, my lord, Randolphus replied.
He was happy that his liege was finally taking a direct interest in these matters.
To further complicate the issue, we have been providing food for Hisako's army of several hundred over the last few days. In the past 5 days alone, we have consumed another 6,052 units of food.
Seeing the panic rising in Richter's eyes, the Chamberlain finally took pity on him.
The situation is not as dire as you may think, my lord. The Pixies, who account for about 100 members of our village, do not require any food to be provided. They subsist somehow on the energy from the quickening. The sprites have also been hunting the surrounding countryside. A definite plus to having Lady Hisako's army stationed nearby is that the surrounding area has been almost free of monsters for the past few days.
What about our own hunters? Richter asked.
That, Randolphus began, handing him another sheet of paper, was my next topic. Each hunter brings in a varying amount of food based on luck and their skill level. Will you be opening up the dungeon to farm animals?
His tone made it clear how he felt about the last question.
Richter had thought about it.
I don't want to if I don't have to. I heard what you said before about it slowing down the dungeon's growth if it can't reabsorb slain monsters. I will if I have to, though. Feeding our people is more important than anything else.
The other man made a notation.
It is good to have that option. As of now, however, each hunter brings in 20 units of food each day on average. Occasionally, they take down a bear or moose, which equates to 500 to 800 units, but this does not happen often. There are also days that they catch nothing. The increasing number of monsters around the village are also depleting the game. The rising levels of ambient mana from your awakened powers attracts both predators and prey, but even the herbivores are having increasing levels, which makes them harder to take down. Despite these difficulties, our 15 village hunters have been averaging 2,200 units of food per week. Now that we have a professional hunter in the village, that number may go up. Our fishermen provide less food than our hunters in a day, but they do so more reliably. Each fisherman produces around 10 units of food every day. With 8 working to plumb the river, they have averaged 500 to 600 units of food a week. Their efficiency is not just due to their skill in fishing, but also what waters they have access to. As of now, they are forced to work the river. The lake in the northern meadow is extremely plentiful and could greatly increase the amount of fish they can catch on a daily basis. I agree that keeping all non-essential personnel away from the Crystal Garden and the Scath Cage is a good idea, though.
Richter thought back to when thousands of fish had swarmed him in the lake, and knew that Randolphus was telling the truth. If things got dire, then he'd ease restrictions on who could access the meadow on a daily basis. Right now, though, he was hearing that each hunter could feed about 20 people a week, and each fisherman could feed 10. The fishermen fed less, but on the other hand, fishing entailed much less risk than prowling a monster-infested forest looking for game. He did a few quick calculations.
Hunters. 2,200 units per week times 6.5 weeks equals 14,300 units. Fishermen, 550 units per week times 6.5 weeks equals 3,575 units. Total garnered food, 17,875 units of food.
Do these numbers check out? He asked.
Randolphus took a look.
Yes, my liege. I must say that it is refreshing to serve a lord with a basic understanding of mathematics.
Richter just eyeballed him. That math hadn't been hard, and with Randy's aristocratic accent, it really wasn't easy to know when the guy was making fun of him, so he just said, "Thanks."
"Indeed, my lord," Randolphus replied with an enigmatic smile.
"Okay, so with what the hunters pull in, we have about 53,000 units of food as of this morning."
There is, unfortunately, one more factor to consider, my lord.
Of course there is,
Richter responded, now genuinely annoyed.
Yes, sir. The care and maintenance of our livestock requires grains that also detract from our reserves. He handed over yet another sheet of paper that had a detailed listing of the Mist Village's livestock.
Richter looked over the chart, learning a great deal in just a few moments. One, it seemed like animals consumed 50% more food when they were pregnant than when they weren't. That definitely explained why Ben and Jerry's was always a safe stock. Two, carnassids were apparently not just mean pigs. Richter had had some small success taking animals from the forest to raise, but very few could be domesticated. Except for the scaths, so far, he'd only been able to transition the carnassids into that role. He had thought they were basically pigs, only slightly more dangerous than wild boar, but as long as they were fed regularly, they stayed fairly docile. The fact that they needed bloody meat to stay calm, though, reminded Richter that even though they were making nice, they were still predators. Danger was always lurking in the land. He was just thankful that someone had figured out that the carnassid piglets needed fresh meat along with grains to grow. He wondered what that might bode for the future if he kept domesticating monsters. What would the bats need once they fixed the goblin bat roost building that had been transported along with the dungeon? It was an interesting thought. Another obvious point that leaped out at Richter was that animals were expensive. 200 units of food was literally enough for a man to live on for almost half a year in the land's weirdo 14-month system. These creatures were eating that much each week. Still, when he thought about how much joy eating burgers brought into his life, he knew it was all worth it. Daddy needed his medicine. Even if he didn't, eggs every morning was in the contract he'd signed with Roswan when the man had first sworn fealty. As irritating as it was to have to factor one more thing into his calculations, he was still immensely grateful that he had someone as diligent as Randolphus to catch these kinds of details. Mama had been completely right when she'd introduced the two of them and Eve. Richter would have been lost without the man. Whatever past the Chamberlain had, and whatever had earned him that evil alignment, was ameliorated, in the Chaos Seed's opinion, by all the good he had already done for the Mist Village. "Is there anything else that is draining our food reserves?" Richter asked. As much as he appreciated Randy, he'd be damned if he'd do another round of math just to hear that gremlins were stealing food every night or some other such nonsense.
"No, my lord," Randolphus responded with a faint, knowing smile.
"Why aren't we adding meat from the animals?"
"We do butcher them when you request, my lord, but I believe it is the best course of action to build up the herds. Next year we should have enough of a surplus that we can utilize them without worrying about depleting that resource.
Speaking of which, I see that most of the females are pregnant."
"Yes," Randolphus replied, nodding. "I can only think that it is because of the boon from your life mastery."
Richter nodded. His bounty of life ability apparently didn't just increase the rate at which any offspring grew by 30%, but also the birth rate. This could also perhaps explain why so many of the village women were starting to sport baby bumps, but Richter would be damned before he pointed out that those women were eating more than normal, too. Of course, there were also boosts to population growth that came both from the village's elevated morale and health. It did still raise a question that had been at the back of his mind for a while, though. "Are the animals giving birth faster than they normally would?"
"No, my lord," came the slightly amused response. Richter breathed a sigh of relief.
While he was all about growing the Mist Village, he had not been super excited about women getting pregnant, then zooming along to delivery 30% faster. It might be paranoia, but he shuddered when he thought about pregnancy hormones being compressed and amplified because pregnancies were shortened. When you also factored in that hundreds of women might be pregnant all at once, well, there wasn't enough chocolate in the universe to deal with that perfect storm of fury. If it had turned out that way, monsters might have avoided the village just out of fear and self-preservation, but Richter still didn't think it would have been worth the cost. The fact that there might always be a great number of women pregnant at the same time still filled him with a small amount of nervous energy, though.
Growing up with two sisters, a female cousin, three aunts, and a mom that all liked to congregate at the house had taught him the wisdom of staying outside as long as possible. Suddenly, Richter saw a great deal of extended hunting trips in his future, and also saw a bunch of villagers, men and non-pregnant women alike, wanting to go with him.
"My lord," Randolphus repeated. He'd actually addressed Richter 5 times in response to the distant look of horror on his liege's face.
The Chaos Seed finally came back to the here and now, shaking himself visibly to banish the waking nightmare.
"Yeah, man. You were saying?"
"I was merely telling you that the length of gestation appears to be the same, but the rate of impregnation is higher than normal. Also, the animals are growing larger and healthier and approaching maturity faster than would otherwise be expected. While at present they are mostly a drain on our resources, each butchered cow should be able to make 500 to 600 units of food when fully grown. We are already benefiting from the milk from the herds, as well as the eggs from the chickens. I believe that while your life ability explains the high birth rate, their increased growth can be attributed to the level 2 bonus from the quickening.
The celestial tree increased the yield of all resources in the village by 25%, as well as making it 25% more likely to find rare resources.
Richter processed the information.
Children might grow into adults faster than normal thanks to living in a place of power that contained life magic. That might be disconcerting, but at least there wouldn't be any mega hormones.
Well, even though the animals are draining some of our resources, it's really not all that bad. They can't have eaten more than 1,500 units of food. That means our total reserves are, what, 51,600 units?
51,647,
the Chamberlain corrected.
Richter made a notation on his scrap paper.
And our current population is 1,053 souls. Taking the pixies out of the equation, though, removes roughly 100 people. Let's call it 950 for simplicity's sake. That means...
He did a few more calculations.
"We'll be out of food in 3 months?" Richter asked.
"Even faster than that, my lord. You are forgetting the loss due to lack of proper storage," Randolphus told him, looking over his figures. "I estimate we will run out of food in 10 weeks and 5 days.
"Then why the hell do you look so chill?" Richter demanded.
The man was just sitting there, calm as a Hindu cow, and the Chaos Seed was 2 seconds from yelling at him. Something like, "How could you let this happen?"
when he realized something.
Randy would never let this happen,
which meant that once again, Richter was missing something. After a moment, he remembered, "Wait, what about the crops?"
"Yes,"
Randolphus said with a pleased smile. He was doing that head nod that teachers always used when the slow student finally grasped a concept. Personally, Richter had always found it to be a bit smug and irritating. He wasn't about to admit that to Randy at this particular moment, though.
"Well, when will the food be ready?"
"Crops typically require 4 to 6 months to mature. That means, depending on the climate, farmers may normally harvest 1 to 2 crops per year. We lost time, unfortunately, during the bugbear attack, and all the plants were ruined. In this part of the land, the planting season is typically only 7 to 8 months out of the 14-month year. We have a shorter season than other areas, especially this close to the mountains. I anticipate the winters will be heavy with snow. In truth, without your bounty of life ability, we might not have had enough time to maximize a harvest. With the 30% boost to growth speed, however, what would take 4 to 6 months will now take 3 to 4, roughly speaking. In addition, the 25% boon from the quickening, coupled with the 100% boost from Isabella's spell, Viral's Blessing, has massively increased the yield of the crops. Having the Ara Magi use gentle rain to always provide water when needed is also a boon. One other factor that is weighing heavily in our favor is the mist workers. Each farm normally requires 25 to 30 people to maintain throughout the crop cycle. The constructs you summon are able to do a great deal of the manual labor, however. Due to this, each farm only requires 12 or 13 people with no decrease in yield. The bonuses to village productivity from our morale and loyalty also decrease the number of workers needed to weed, irrigate, remove pests, and perform the countless other tasks required to maintain a farm. With the recent boost to productivity and the fact that we now have a professional farmer, we may even be able to allocate some of the farmers to other tasks.
Richter nodded, impressed. He motioned for Randy to carry on.
As I said before, each farm can typically produce a crop sufficient to feed 500 people for half a year. Put another way, each harvest would make 100 to 110,000 units of food. With the boosts to yield, that will come closer to 250,000 units.
That's great! Richter exclaimed.
Even with the increased population, that would be more than enough to get them through the winter, with a healthy surplus besides.
When will the harvest be ready?
Most likely in 80 to 100 days, my lord. We will also need to muster almost every hand in the village to help pull in the harvest for several days when the time comes.
Richter's excitement soured. And our current food stores will run out in 70 days or so.
That is correct, my lord,
Randolphus agreed. He couldn't help but add, that is if we forego any more feasts. His liege pinned him with another glare.
Not helping, man.
In the Chamberlain's opinion, he was being exactly helpful, but he kept that to himself.
This is a problem, Richter finally realized. Even if the crop can be ready early, I don't want to mess around with the ability to feed our people. Even a novice ruler like me knows that's a good way to create an uprising.
We could always have the food people receive each day, but living on half rations can have serious negative effects upon the morale, loyalty, and even the health of a settlement. As you just stated, ignoring those city mechanics can have very serious consequences.
Yeah, Richter said slowly and thoughtfully. I don't want any part of that.
I must also point out that the village's supply of ale is nearing depletion, and that units of grain need to be allocated away from consumption and into brewing if you want to make more.
Richter quickly straightened in his chair, and his voice took on a tone of grave intent.
This just got real, man. We need to deal with this. Now!
He thought long and hard for a minute before suggesting, What if we allocate some of the new villagers to be hunters or fishermen?
An excellent idea, my lord,
Randolphus told him with a magnanimous smile. He took out a sheaf of paper he had already prepared, even while sighing inwardly at how Richter had just come up with an idea that he himself had proposed at the start of the conversation. Why were rulers always so much work? Not even just work. They required high amounts of maintenance. Yes, rulers were high maintenance.
Randolphus hid an internal smirk, thinking how spot-on that description was.
The spy surreptitiously made a notation in the corner of one of his papers so he wouldn't forget such a perfect turn of phrase. Then he prepared to ooh and ah over any other ideas Richter came up with for the next several minutes.
Chapter 78, Day 145, Kuborn 35. Zero AOC.
Randolphus ultimately led Richter to agree to allocating 10% of the new villagers to either hunting or fishing. That number would give the village a nice cushion against unexpected food needs. No additional farmers would be required as it was too late in the year to start a new crop. Similarly, the livestock didn't need any more handlers than they already had. After finding the best people for fishing and hunting, the remaining new villagers would be heavily encouraged to join the guard and, after that, the construction crews. They covered a few other topics. The Chamberlain had taken the time to assess the personal levels of everyone in the village. When the first wave of colonists had come to the Mist Village, most of the civilians had been level 5 or below. The guards and former soldiers were more advanced due to the time they had spent fighting, but most of them were still level 12 and below. The hunters had been somewhere in the middle, having levels 4 to 7. They gained XP from killing animals, but not quite as much as the fighters gained in battle. Two events had affected the levels of every one of the villagers, both celestial in nature. The first was the growth of the quickening. It had given 5,000 experience points to every single villager, including the children. It had also earned Richter a large number of relationship points with every villager because they knew he was to thank for the boost. That XP had brought even a level 1 child up to level 4
and had advanced most of the adult civilians to level 6 to 8. The second event had been the birth of Alora and the other celestial pixies. That had given every villager an additional 2,000 XP. 7,000 experience didn't mean a great deal to Richter, mostly because of Alma's brain drain ability, but it was the reason that many of the villagers had finally gotten above level 10. That in turn had given them the opportunity to obtain a non-combat profession. It also required that they be a journeyman in a skill, but that had helped them level as well. Each time someone reached a skill level that was a multiple of 10, they were given a reward in the form of XP. Level 10 provided 2,000 experience. Level 20 awarded 4,000, etc. Anyone who gained the 45 skill levels required to be a journeyman also gained 20,000 XP just from the bonuses. It only took 1,000 experience points to reach level 2, then another 2,000 to reach level 3, and another 3,000 to reach level 4 for a total of 6,000. The XP needed to get from 11 to 12, though, was 13,000, and to get to level 13 was an additional 15K. The increase doubled every 10 levels, until at his own level of 38, it would take 141,000 experience to level again. When you realized that fighting lower monsters might literally only give 1 XP each, reaching higher levels was a very daunting task. Richter had instituted a policy of non-combatants being included on hunting trips and guard patrols. Even if they didn't directly fight, they would still gain experience as long as the group was strike squad size or smaller. In other words, as long as there were 5 or less in the party. The final factor in his people's rapid level ascent was Richter's generosity. The first and possibly most powerful potion Richter had ever found was the Potion of Clarity. Each one gave an unprecedented 25% increase to the experience someone gained for an entire day. It might not make a huge difference during just one day of fighting, but if someone was on it when they reached a milestone in skill progression or when they were finishing a quest, you could gain thousands of extra experience points. Thanks to all of that, the levels of Richter's original villagers were much higher than would have been expected from commoners. The average level of the civilians, barring the children, was now between 6 and 9. The hunters had advanced to all fall between levels 8 and 12, while the villagers who had previously been guards had gained a precious level or two and were now almost all between 10 and 14. Even better, many of the villagers who joined the guard without fighting experience were now nearing levels 9 and 10. The newly freed prisoners, in contrast, were still levels 6 and below. But while their imprisonment had been horrible, they had been able to practice the same tasks every day, all day, so more than a few of them had reached respectable skill levels, especially in mining. That skill progression was why their personal levels were higher than the average commoner. Randolphus also wanted to discuss the state of the treasury. First, he confirmed that Richter wanted the new workers to be paid 4 silver each fortnight. That was the same wage the old villagers received, with a few notable exceptions. The scholars, for instance, were each making only 6 silvers a fortnight to offset the rather large price Basil had had to initially pay their guild to buy them out of debt. Randolphus, alternatively, made 2 gold a month. The man had fought against such a high salary, but Richter believed in rewarding good work. The calculations Randy had made showed that Richter couldn't afford to just spend money willy-nilly, though. The entire thing was written in the Chamberlain's exacting script on pale parchment. Mist Village Treasury. Items. 2,938 gold. 4,691 silver. 11,789 copper. Worth 3,524.97 gold. Gems, worth 25,000 to 30,000 gold. Tephanim jewelry, worth 15,000 to 30,000 gold. 5,234 cobalt coins, worth 5,234 gold. 37 Dark Khan cobalt coins. Asterisk. Total, 48,758.97
to 68,758.97. Asterisk. Adventuring had been highly profitable. The village treasury was flush. Depending on how much the gems and Tephanim jewelry could sell for, the Mist Village could muster the equivalent of about $5 million. That wasn't including the Dark Khan coins, for obvious reasons. The ancient coins were magically enchanted to be the answer to an age-old quest. The entire set had to be collected, however, something that had not yet been managed. Randolphus had advised not selling them, which Richter had agreed with. If need be, though, any of the Dark Khan coins could sell for between 100 and tens of thousands of gold. Of course, anyone able to pay that much might just kill Richter instead of agreeing to the deal. The next list on the page showed the village's trade goods. The various ingots of metal the village had could be worth coppers in the case of iron, or be almost priceless in regard to elementum. Randolphus had also listed the potions of clarity, magical crystal, enchanted weapons, and high-quality potions, which most likely would be the Mist Village's primary exports. There was also a list of other resources like timber and marbled quartz, but there were obvious logistical problems with moving large enough quantities of those to be worthwhile. They did not have standard prices, unlike the items in the first table. Richter also wouldn't even consider selling some items, like the rarer ingots of metal. The next columns showed investments the village had made. Investments. 1. Loan to the Company of the White Pearl in the amount of 862 gold to be repaid in enchanted items and books. 2. 200 gold loaned to Basil to aid in his diplomatic mission to the dwarf tribes of the Serrated Mountains. Richter had lent a good amount of gold to Hafiz's sons after they had stopped in the village on their way down to the twins. In addition to securing a 10% discount on all future trades, he had gotten the four young men to agree to purchase magical items and books to fill the library Richter wanted to build one day. The loan to Basil was so that he could buy his way out of trouble and hopefully wouldn't wind up eaten by mountain pygmies or some such nonsense. The last set of data on the page was Richter's least favorite, the dreaded expense report. At this point, the only line items were the salaries he was paying his people. Unfortunately, it added up to quite a bit. Mist Village expenses in gold. Salary owed to 160 workers each fortnight, first wave of colonists, 64 gold. Fortnights of salary incurred before arrival of second wave of colonists, 4. Salary owed to 329 workers each fortnight, first and second wave of colonists, 131.6 gold. Fortnights of salary owed 329 workers, 3. Current salary owed 2 scribes each fortnight, 1.2 gold. Fortnights of salary owed scribes, 3. Current salary owed to Randolphus per fortnight, 1 gold. Fortnights of salary owed to Randolphus, 5, adjusted for wage increase. Total salary owed to date, 659.4 gold. Amount owed to families of slain workers, 9 slain in bugbear attack, 1 lost in skirmish with scouts, 3 lost in battle with goblin witch doctor, 46 lost in raid. 790.6 gold. Hard currency available, 3,524.97 gold. Minus salary owed to date, minus death payouts, 2,074.97 gold. Current salary owed to 646 workers, plus scribes, plus Randolphus, each fortnight, 258.2 gold. Fortnights remaining in first year, 26.5. Coin needed to pay out debts at end of first year, 8,292.3 gold. Total coin on hand, hard coin plus cobalt silver, 8,680.97 gold. Fortnights of hard currency remaining before needing to use cobalt silver, 8. Coin remaining,
388.67 gold.
These numbers are right? Richter asked, already sure of the answer.
Yes, my lord, Randolphus affirmed.
Well, shit, Richter said quietly. In the back of his head, he'd been wondering why every ruler in history didn't just try to own everything like he was doing. This was why. For all the awesome benefits he'd enjoyed, an entire village fueling his profession, for instance, this was the downside. It was frackin' expensive. The way things were going, the village would be out of cold currency in 10 months. It wasn't exactly an emergency. The ship Shiovanna was building should be ready soon so they could start trading, which should help the village coffers. This, at least, was an area that the village was sitting pretty in. At least, that was what Richter thought, until Randolphus handed him the next sheet of paper. Reading it, the Chaos Seed's heart sank. Approximate material cost of portals. Novice, 11,000 gold. Initiate, 28,000 gold. Apprentice, 126,000 gold.
Before you ask, my lord, these are just rough estimates, but I have studied the documents you made about the portals. A novice portal alone requires 10 pounds of refined gold. Each pound costs 200 gold crowns, and that is not the only expensive resource. If the list you wrote down is correct, initiate and apprentice portals require even more rare resources.
Well, I made 2 lists, Richter added hopefully. The second list had less expensive material options?
I used the second list, Randolphus answered gently.
God damn it, Richter cursed under his breath. Slapping both hands to his face, he slowly dragged them downward. So even with all the money we have, even with all the adventuring I've done, I still don't have enough coin to build even a novice-ranked portal?
No, my lord. Not if you intend to pay the wages you promised your people. To be clear, I highly advise that we follow through with that promise. The consequences of reneging would be severe and quite possibly deadly. You are also only viewing the cost of building a portal here, my lord. Keep in mind, you will need to build receiving portals in other locations.
Hisako said she'd cover the cost of building one at the Hearth Tree, but still, you're right. We have to find a way to make more. I know the portals will be a huge boon for us, and will definitely pay for themselves many times over, but this initial cost...
He trailed off, shaking his head.
There is the dungeon, my lord, but only so much can be gained if you continue to restrict your people from farming it.
Richter looked up at him. You're suggesting I allow more people to go inside? The Chamberlain shrugged. I know you want to protect your people, and I believe this is an admirable trait. You are their lord, however, not their father. You must allow your people to grow, even if that risks their safety.
Richter thought long and hard about it, until finally responding. I won't let anyone without combat experience in. I won't let the dungeon grind them up, but anyone that knows the risks, agrees to pay the village their cut, and is approved by either Tarad, Calder, Sion, or Kenchiro, can enter in a 5-man squad. He shook his head. Richter had no illusions that he hadn't just signed the death warrant of some of his people. Randolphus was right, though. He needed to think about the needs of all his people. Of all 1,053 souls that relied upon him for safety. It was time he accepted that blood would be needed to grow his kingdom, but that didn't mean he had to like it. There wasn't too much else to say after, except,
wait, you... I did include all the gold I found in the cave with the dark aberration, right?
Richter asked. The Chamberlain's eyes lasered in on his liege like a cobra about to strike. His voice was deceptively calm.
What gold, my lord? If you had anything else to add to the village finances after I have spent countless hours trying to find a way to stave off financial ruin, that would be quite helpful to know. Is it a large amount?
In his heart, Richter knew this was one of those times where there just wasn't a right answer, like, why were you staring at my sister? Or, what's that spot on your dick? So, instead,
He pulled a large satchel out of his bag of holding and pushed it towards Randy. The Chamberlain just tapped his pen against the side of his clipboard for long moments before setting both down and opening the bag. When he saw the gold bars inside, he closed his eyes and threw his head back as if he was praying for strength. Finally, he looked at his lord again.
"You do realize that each of these bars is worth 100 gold coins?"
"Yes, my lord."
Randolphus pinched the bridge of his nose.
"There are 21 bars in this satchel. A veritable fortune."
Richter plastered a smile on his face.
"Nice to have a little breathing room, huh?"
The Chamberlain let out a long, suffering sigh.
"Quite, my lord.
In the future, if you could make me aware of resources earlier..." The Chaos Seed nodded magnanimously.
"Anything I can do to help?"
Randolphus had to stifle an eye roll. Straightening his papers, he asked to take his leave, but there was one more item that Richter needed to address.
"Randy, I know that I couldn't do this without you. I think it's high time we made your position more official. Since I leveled in my administration skill, I can assign someone to act in my stead. Will you become my town administrator?"
"I was hoping that you would ask, my lord," Randolphus said with a bow.
"I am honored. There may be a problem with that, however."
Unfortunately, the universe seemed to agree. The lack of a town hall prohibits you from assigning a town administrator. Richter was thoroughly tired of the lack of a town hall cramping his style. Hopefully it would be done soon, though. The two men left the room and walked down the hall. Once they reached the central chamber, they saw Hisako, Sumiko, Yoshi, Sion, Tirad, and Calder standing over the Great Seal. Richter ordered the other guards to wait outside the catacombs. He wasn't sure what was about to happen, and he had secrets that he didn't want the whole village to know about. Richter quickly repeated the story of the Kinder Sepulchre for everyone, and told them that it was time to check the memory that he had gained from the Death Knight. He also warned them that the last time he'd had a memory involving the Lich Lord, that creature had been able to detect his presence.
"How do you plan to protect against that happening again?"
Sion asked.
"About that," Richter responded.
He sent a mental call to Alma, who flew down to hover in front of him. He looked around at everyone assembled.
"Now just stay calm, guys. This might look a little weird."
Then the Meseji began. Twin beams of glacial blue-white light flowed from Alma's eyes into his own. He could feel how excited she was to join with her master once again. Their thoughts flowed together, becoming more in the process, yet still somehow distinct. Her body turned into pure psychic energy, and those with him in the cavern had to look away from the blinding light. His own muscles and bones shifted. It felt a bit easier this time. His body seemed to almost welcome the change. His skin thickened to scales. His fingers became talons, and his face lengthened to a draconian snout. Once again, while Richter felt like it had taken long seconds, it was only an instant in the eyes of his audience. Everyone looked at him in surprise and shock. Tirad had even taken a step back and was holding the hilt of his sword. A sharp-toothed smile crossed Richter's draconian face. It was the exact response he'd been looking for. The Chaos Seed chuckled at his own joke, and then marveled at the fact that he sounded exactly like Muttley when he laughed. That made him think about how Dick Dastardly had always been a dick, obviously.
"Focus, Master."
"What?"
"Right," he thought back.
Then speaking aloud, his voice hissed out,
"Get ready."
"For what?" Sion asked.
"Exactly,"
was the only answer Richter had.
After forming his mental defenses and entering his mindscape, he visualized the memory. A three-sided pyramid popped into existence. It was made of semi-clear purple-black light and was surrounded by a neon-green aura of eldritch energy. It hovered outside his castle, 40 feet off the ground and 20 feet away. Richter looked up at it from where his avatar stood atop the battlements of his mental defenses. Alma landed on the crenellation next to him, once again the size of a large dog. He smiled at his familiar's avatar and laid his hand on her warm, scaly neck. As prepared as he would ever be, he accessed the memory.
Congratulations, you have captured a memory from a ghast soul eater. This memory can only be accessed for the next 14 hours and 12 minutes before dissolution into the ether. Do you wish to access this memory, yes or no?
Richter selected yes, and another prompt appeared.
Living through this memory will be instantaneous in regard to your timeline. Due to the presence of your mindscape, however, you may now also view this memory remotely. If you choose this second option, time will pass commensurate to the time dilation of your mindscape. Which do you choose, direct experience or remote viewing?
Curious, Richter chose remote viewing. To his surprise, his mindscape didn't disappear. The only two times he had done this before, his consciousness had been drawn into the memory itself. That was probably the default direct experience option. He had felt the actual sensations and feelings of the Decamer Knight and the Goblin Witch Doctor. This time, the pyramid just started to spin and revolve in multiple directions at once until it was moving so fast it looked like a sphere. Then, from the heart of the illusory globe, an image formed. Richter quickly realized he was seeing the memory perspective of the Death Knight, but instead of being held hostage by it, he was watching a 3D movie. While the memory was starting to play, he found he could even switch his view to still be aware of his physical surroundings and everyone standing with him at the Great Seal. Marveling at the change, Richter wondered what other opportunities this afforded. Could he pause the memory? Even rewind it? No sooner had he thought that than four symbols appeared on the spinning disc. They were VR movie symbols! One was two overlapping arrows pointing backwards, the next a large play triangle followed by two vertical lines for pause and then a fast forward. Somehow his mind had conjured these familiar icons to aid his manipulation of the memory. The fact that Richter needed such infantile tools to manipulate his own mind might have bothered someone else, but the Chaos Seed wasn't about to be brought down. This was cool! A prompt appeared in his vision. Richter pushed pause on the memory and then read it.
Congratulations, your foresight and preparations have served you well. Due to erecting mental defenses first, you have learned that the pull of captured memories can be resisted. You may now review the memories gained from brain drain without actually living through them. This greatly protects your mind from potentially dangerous mental energies. You may still live through the actual memory if you choose, but as before, this will degrade the memory and cause it to vanish. Observing it remotely allows you to view it multiple times until the 24-hour time limit has elapsed.
This is what you have been doing?
Alma asked. Her hissing voice had a dangerous undertone.
Richter was still so geeked out about not having to actually suffer through whatever this memory might involve that he didn't pick up on the obvious warning signs that there was an angry woman within striking distance. Instead, he just spoke to her in a tone of happy surprise. I had no idea I could watch the memories this way. I might miss one or two details from not actually living through it, but this also means I won't have to deal with whatever pain or other horrible sensations that person went through. I'll take it.
Good for you, Master.
Her response was overly animated and encouraging this time, the emotions easily detectable even with her sibilant voice. The angry undertone was completely gone. The fact that she was so cheery should have been another warning sign, but unfortunately for Richter, he had missed the first signal and so didn't catch this one either. His oversight in this case was completely understandable, but sadly, that fact wouldn't save him.
Alma had skipped the second level of woman anger, yelling, and had progressed all the way to the third level, sweetness, a stage also known as the honey trap. She continued in the same loving voice.
It is almost as if there are benefits to erecting mental defenses before you plunge your mind blindly into the memories of a dead man.
She snaked her head to the left to glare at him. Richter finally heard the train whistle.
Rather than wisely leaving the tunnel, though, he instead opted for the often regretted, "I'll just talk shit to the train" strategy. Looking at her sourly, he mumbled, "You don't have to be a dick about it." "What?" she shrieked. "What?" she shrieked even louder. Richter's foolish choice to challenge her skyrocketed Alma all the way to level 6 of woman anger, supersonic.